the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another nice-looking, warm, humid kind of day. That's the way it is. It is June here in East Central Alabama, and we hope you're doing all right. We're here comfy. Turned the AC down just a little bit when we came in, so we'll be even more comfy as we continue. Here on the Tuesday Drive, it's Bill, Dan, and Drew, the regular crew here for the duration, I believe, today. At least, I think that's the plan. Now, we do have one update to our schedule. Got notification about an hour ago that travel ball practice has Barrett Sally busy today. So it's moved up. That's good to know that he's got a – I'm assuming that he's got a son that is now on the travel ball team, unless Barrett is just so into coaching.
So sought after as a coach.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe.
They need Barrett Sully in there.
Barrett won't be able to be with us today. So we've got it all to ourselves here for hour number one. Jake Crane of Crane & Company should be with us, though, in hour number two. So that's the plan for the show today. And we can talk whatever you would like today, obviously. We don't talk that much golf, but the worldwide story today in sports is the unification, if you will, of all the major golf associations.
That's
professional
right.
Golf associations.
The World Tour, the World Tour, the LIV Golf League and the PGA Tour are merging into a larger commercial business. An announcement earlier today. This is mostly from the ESPN.com report that I'm taking these details. But there had been legal battles between the organizations, and now it seems like they're going to cooperate. The LIV Tour was established a few years ago. It's the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund is largely backing that organization, and they're going to have a large say in the new organization between the three groups, including a lot of advertising of Saudi Arabian tourism going forward on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, which I imagine helped facilitate this deal.
You think multiple billions of dollars might have helped facilitate this and stop the lawsuits that were looking like they were going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like we were going to have, and you've seen these before, Bill, in other professional sports where there's an upstart league that tries to go to war with the existing brand and lure talent away and establish its own identity.
Right.
And often these end in mergers.
And, well, sometimes the upstarts don't have the wherewithal to be able to continue, and that's usually what the established entities, leagues, rely on is, well, we're the name, we can outlast them, they'll run out of money before they can take over. The Saudis weren't going to run out of money.
The LIV Golf Tour, which I think made it different than a lot of upstart sports leagues in pretty much any sport, is the nearly unlimited amount of money that they seemingly were ready to lose in establishing LIV Golf. And you know, it was going to, I think that the PGA... People are criticizing the PGA Tour for going into business with an organization that they've been so critical of for the last 2 years or so. You know, I think there were golfers that were encouraged to be outspoken about the merits of the PGA Tour and the faults of LIV Golf. You know, other golfers were. I think there was pressure to not take the big offer from LIV Golf and stay loyal to the PGA Tour, and a lot of that seems to go out the window. And I think there are people who want explanations as to, you know, were they sold a false bill of goods before or something like that. But no, there's it ends the rivalry that had been, and LIV Golf was struggling to find an audience.
So you're absolutely right about that.
People who, you know, say it wasn't even a rivalry, but the notion of an upstart league that was going to seriously challenge the PGA Tour, now it seems like they're going to find a way to work together. I imagine that means PGA Tour golfers will be allowed to participate in LIV team golf events and vice versa. Players that left the PGA Tour for the LIV Golf Tour might still be allowed to play in key PGA Tour events while fulfilling their LIV Golf obligations. And for the PGA Tour, that means that some of the stars that left the PGA Tour for LIV could be back on the PGA Tour participating and competing and drawing the audience that they draw with their star power.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some interesting things to think about from this. I mean, there was a statement about players reapplying for memberships, and if you're able to cross over and to go into either one, yeah, that seems to open that up. And as you and I were talking about this, an hour or so ago, I can see this becoming, all right, you've got the PGA Tour and the regular events, and then it's like special events, sort of like not viewed as exhibitions, but sort of special events, special 54-hole events that would be sprinkled in along the way, where you'd be able to see a better field, perhaps, you know, in at least one, but maybe both.
And not to wade into politics, because I don't like getting those emails. But I will say that part of the reason this is such a big story is because the public investment fund is controlled by the Saudi Arabian government, and there have been criticisms of the human rights record of the Saudi Arabian government. And folks, you know, that was one of the criticisms of the LIV Golf Tour itself, was that it was being backed by a government with a questionable human rights record in the eyes of some. And that's, I think, something that a lot of PGA Tour golfers are now facing, is that they are, by remaining on the PGA Tour, they're now in business with the Saudi Arabian government. And some golfers are, especially after the last couple of years and the public relations battle that the PGA Tour waged with the LIV Golf Tour, to now be in business with the people that you were willing to criticize, and to the point where you're willing to bring up their human rights record as a government, like to now be in business with them the next day. I think for some golfers, you know, they want explanations as to how long this process took, and also, you know, they're going to have to figure out what they want to do next, because that's something that at least for some golfers it could be an important decision as far as how comfortable they are remaining in business with their new bosses.
Yeah, so that is the big news, no question, worldwide today. So we'd love to hear your thoughts as we get things underway here. Let's go ahead and remind you, hour number one of The Drive is brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline, one of the ways you can get through to us here on The Drive, and that's by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. I think we had I got a couple of tweets yesterday that we may have had a problem initially with
yesterday's podcast. I got a couple of them as well. As a matter of fact, younger son said he went to a listen and hadn't seen any since last Wednesday.
All right, so
we got that. We got that.
We're working on it. We're working on that.
Okay, that's fine.
It fixed.
Yeah, we just wanted to let folks know that yes, we're efforting that.
Yeah,
we have done shows. I can promise you that. Yep. All right. 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, sports wise? So I mean, where does this merger rank?
Well, I mean, we had a pretty big one. I mean, it's sports adjacent when you think about the UFC and the WWE merging into a larger company earlier this year, and you know, fronted by Endeavor. You know, that's going to trade. I think it's going to be publicly traded. But there, you know, there was. I mean, you think about The NBA and the ABA, the NFL with the AFL back in the day. I mean, those are pretty significant. This one seems a little bit smaller in that the LIV Tour probably hadn't achieved as much as some of the leagues that had been.
Oh no, you're right. They hadn't really appeared to be a threat to the audience or the advertisers.
So still getting their foothold, but no, it's a significant one when you think about the golfers who left for the LIV Tour and the fact that they have, a lot of those golfers have pretty significant followings, and in theory, I think there was the belief that exclusivity was bad for the game, right? The notion that you would have certain golfers that only play the PGA Tour, other golfers only playing the LIV Tour, and they never or very rarely play tournaments against one another. I think people thought that was too fragmented, too segmented, and ultimately the important people, the people making the key decision, have decided there's probably more money in the organizations working together rather than trying to fight for the same audience. But it's a big merger, even if LIV was a relative upstart compared to some of the other things that have merged with the established brand in the sports industry before.
334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline, and let's get to it. And James is up first. Hey, James.
Hey, guys.
Good to hear from you, James.
Hey, sorry I haven't been able to call in lately, but I've been really busy. But I wanted to call in and talk to you about a little bit about what the interview with Andy Burcham with the guys from the show before you guys had, and I think Andy's dead on accurate with his characterization of the Auburn program, especially the football program. I don't know if y'all got to hear much.
No,
of it
I wish
not.
I had. I was busy and didn't get a chance to listen to the entire show. Please let us know, what Andy had to say.
Well, basically, he talked about the football program and how, 23 season has been somewhat disappointing on the basketball and baseball front. We've had a lot of talent, but we hadn't really, when it came to the, playoffs, really hadn't been able to get it together and get it moving in the right direction. In that sense, we hadn't had enough consistency there. But he's not worried about, that so much as a long-term deal. He thinks that that will correct itself. And I agree with him, too, and the one thing I really thought he hit on was talking about, when Harsin was here, when he got fired after the Arkansas game, Coach Cadillac did a lot by not only unifying that program, but possibly even healing it or maybe even saving the football program itself.
I completely agree with that. Yeah.
And I think, and the reason why I bring it all up and I wanted to talk to y'all about it is because I hear so much from Auburn people that are wringing their hands worried about, how are we going to be able to compete with Georgia and Alabama? Listen, Georgia and Alabama don't want us to compete. That's a pretty fair knowledge. But at the same time, too, they know we can do, when we have our stuff together and when we have the talent that we need to compete and win, we'll beat them on an equal playing field.
I would jump in and say that, first of all, I think everybody in the country is figuring out how to compete with Georgia in football right now. Ohio State got kind of
trying to figure out.
I mean, yeah. Ohio State got kind of close in a playoff game, but for the most part, that program appears to be that one appears to be setting the standard at the moment. With all due respect to Nick Saban and Alabama, at the moment,
no, because they won back to back national titles,
right? And go into this year as a pretty comfortable number one in the eyes of most people who break this thing down as well. As for Auburn baseball and Auburn basketball, I think perspective matters, right? And if all you know about Auburn basketball or what you've mostly seen is the Bruce Pearl era or the second half of the Bruce Pearl era.
Or if the last 5 years is your main focus.
Then maybe it's a disappointing year when Auburn is above 500 in conference play and goes to the NCAA tournament and doesn't make it to the second weekend. But I think if you've seen this program, and again, at some point you stop comparing it to the depths of where it was, but Auburn hasn't had that many above 500 seasons in conference play in the last 25 years. Right? Like I would guess, without looking it up, I would think that Auburn has probably had, I'm certain it's single digits, but I would say probably in the last 25 seasons, Auburn men's basketball has had an above 500 record in regular season conference play, 8 at the most. I'm thinking it's probably closer to 6.
I'd say six or seven. You might be able to go back a little farther than that.
So for this to be one of the 6 or 7 seasons in the last 25 years where Auburn's had an above 500 record in conference play, yeah, I mean the postseason's disappointing, but a lot of teams grapple with a disappointing end to the season. But the regular season, you know, it's still, all things considered, above average in the recent history of the program. I'd say that's true of baseball as well, right? I mean, regular season conference wins for baseball, it was the best regular season they've had in SEC play
in years.
More than
a decade.
It was Butch's best regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, I understand the disappointment of how it ended, but don't take how it ended and only look at that when you're projecting how things are moving forward, because there was a lot of meaningful data in the regular season too.
I agree, and that's he kind of ended it with, he was very excited to be the voice of the Auburn Tigers going forward in the future, because he brought up, look at what the tennis teams are doing, look at what the golf teams are doing, gymnastics is consistently doing, soccer, you know, we've always traditionally had a good swim team and equestrian team. Athletics as a whole is trending upwards. So don't get, he really got into where, don't get bogged down on what you think is disappointing endings for two different programs, considering baseball and basketball, because it will trend up as well. You know, and I do think we're in a pivotal time in Auburn's history with that too, because I think there's going to be a lot of good things to be seen and said. You know, and I think that's why it's so critical that people, you got to understand Auburn. You know, when we had that game with Texas A&M, you know, we had two losing teams playing in that game, and people didn't understand why we were so excited. It's not about what people were excited about at Alabama. It's not the same thing what people were excited about at Auburn. Auburn wants to win. The people want to win. But it's just more than what it is. You know, to me, Bama comes off as, we want to win, and that's all we care about. Winning's everything. Winning's not everything at Auburn, but it's a good part of it. You know, it's more. It's just the culture, and people've got to stop bringing their hands over all these woes and past, you know, mistakes. It will change itself, you know, if we all stay committed to that course. So, but that's all I got to say, guys. I appreciate the time.
Hey, appreciate the call, James. Here's the one of, if not the most important thing to keep in mind, that a huge factor in your athletics success is everyone being on the same page and moving in the same direction. I think I've been around the Auburn athletic program for a long time. I don't know that I've seen as much synchronicity, if you will, from the administration to the athletic department to the coaching staffs. I think there is more of a feeling of them working together. And sometimes it's not that there's been working against, but not necessarily being big supporters of each other.
35 seasons of Auburn men's basketball dating back to 1988.
Yeah, and
how many?
6.
I've got eight. above 500 since 88.
Well, there have been 5 of the last 6 years.
Right,
and then 5 of the last 6, and before that, the next winning season was 2008-09. Before that, winning season was the 99-2000, the 98-99. And then the last winning season before that was 1987-88.
Right. So the 5
since 88, there've been 7 then, right?
8. There've been 5 under Bruce, 1 under Lebo, and then the two
under Cliff.
Yeah, the two at the end of the decade.
So, since Sonny.
So 8.
Yeah.
8 in 35 years. So yeah, pretty good regular season.
But I mean, I know. The feeling a lot of times is, and look, things are a little different now. The climate is just is different for everything. Nobody, I'm talking fan bases, just talking people. Nobody has patience the way there used to be. It would be, oh, that's fine, because you see other teams make quick moves, and you feel like, we need to do that too. We need to be as good as quickly as such and such. And, yeah, so that's just something to keep in mind. Appreciate the call, James. We need to get to our first break. Yellowhammer, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a 5-7
and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 25 minutes after 4 o'clock, and let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Yellowhammer is next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, two things. First, how to beat Georgia. It's how to beat anybody. Have a really good, solid, strong presence at the line of scrimmage, and you have a realistic opportunity to beat anyone.
Well, I'll tell you, how to beat Georgia is you got to get more talent everywhere. That's how Georgia, that's how Alabama has done it with Nick Saban. I mean, solid coaching, no question. You had outstanding coaching, but if you have more talent than anyone else and competent coaching, you're going to win.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just saying the major building block is the line of scrimmage. So, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Look at Georgia on the line of scrimmage, too, the last few years.
I mean, wow.
They've been fantastic.
So, anyway, second thing, this live golf thing, I'm not going to go into the corruption and the Saudi Arabians and all that. I'm just going to say this, that we have people from other countries coming up here and buying our farmland, buying our timberland, and now they're buying our sports products, buying the revenue from that. And it just troubles me. And that's all I have to say about that.
No, and that's not, I mean, I think that there's, there are some folks who, you know, specifically I think in the case of the Saudi Arabian PIF, mm-hmm. are, you know, that's one of the issues with the with the merger of the PGA and the LIV, and there are not just in the United States but other countries as well. You know, they've had foreign investment in sports teams and sports leagues. You know, some folks think it's a, you know, part of a PR strategy for various governments or various organizations, and yeah, I can understand why some fans would be concerned.
Sure, absolutely, and you can understand why countries do things like that. I mean, you know, that's a way to try to get back, you know, have people sort of, well, don't think about this. Look at all the good things or whatever when you pump more money in. And you know, we were talking about this a little earlier, and I understand. It's no question. I understand where most folks are coming from. It is very difficult to not have a situation like that when it's presented to anyone when they're just overwhelmed. I mean, because right now, yes, the PGA looks, I mean, like the biggest hypocrites you've ever seen. I mean, coming out and being as negative as they were. Don't chase the money. And now the money has done that. But you know, before you criticize, I mean, I can't put myself in that situation. But I can say that, yeah, there's probably a number that would make me do some or go along with some things that I might not be crazy about.
Yeah, and I think the golfers who, if anyone, you know, who can feel misled in this situation, it feels like it's the golfers that were put out that were put out as representatives of the PGA Tour to sort of fight the battle in the media with the LIV Golf Tour. You know, now the folks that were backing them, you know, have taken the money from the same folks who backed the LIV Golf Tour. So that's, you know, I can understand where a Rory was like that for a while. I know he's changed his mind and said he's going to focus more on golf and less on, you know, fighting that battle publicly. But, you know, I know Rory was one guy out there, you know, in the spotlight, and he's got to, you know, he's got to have some questions for people today about the way he was deployed by the PGA Tour now that they've merged with the LIV and the World Tour.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, a reminder, Barrett Salee unable to be with us this week, so the phone line's still open, and we'll get right back to them when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
he mentioned on social media that he found out through a breaking news tweet.
Yeah, and some of the guys were very loyal to the PGA through the whole thing. I mean, Tiger Woods turned down what, $700 million? So,
if not a billion, there were some folks that said it may have been a.
Usually you'd look at that number and you'd say, yeah, whatever. But those guys have it. They're good. They're good for it. Like, yeah, they'll sure pay it.
Yeah. Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Terry. I think he's probably talking about Billy Payne.
Oh yeah. Okay.
You know, the former chairman of Augusta.
So, we were talking, let's switch gears a little bit. We were talking yesterday before I took off about who you would want on an 8-game schedule.
Yeah. And we got for Auburn. We got a few calls, not so much into that, but more on the 8 and 9 and how to do it and things like that. And we were talking about trying to balance it. I really think that in 2024, you're not going to see it's going to look, I think, still very similar to division play. There will be some changes. It won't be, everybody won't be playing the same 6 other teams, but I would think most everybody in the West is going to play most of the teams in the West, and the same will be the story in the East. I'd be very surprised if the teams in the West, everybody in the West didn't play at least 4 other teams from the West.
You know, maybe there are teams that would object to the sort of the clumsy algorithm we found yesterday, right? But like,
trying to come up point-wise?
Well, no. Just the idea of you play 5 division opponents, you play your permanent opponent from the other division, your rival. You play
one of the new teams.
You play either Texas or Oklahoma, and you play whoever you played in the rotation in 2023. You play at the opposite.
You know what I'd do though?
Reverse that.
To make it more fun, I'd do the other team that you haven't played the longest from the other side.
Okay, so
if it worked out that would be fair.
Instead of a rematch with your 23
rotational opponent. Make it something, you're going to add either Texas or Oklahoma and somebody else that you haven't played in the last 6 or 7 years.
It worked out nicely for Auburn because it's Vanderbilt,
true,
right? But, I mean, it's also
it needed to work out to be Vandy because Auburn's playing Alabama, Georgia, and LSU.
Right, and maybe Texas or Oklahoma
right
as well.
Well, and right, they'd have to play one of those too.
Right, to do
by
it the
doing
way
that. So yeah, that makes it a little tougher.
Yeah, you know, the Florida one is the one where I think Florida might not be what the last 10 years say they are, or the last 5 years say they are.
They've had a couple of much better years than Auburn has over the last 5 or 6 years.
And who knows what's going to the 2024 team could look like too? Right?
That's true.
I don't know if Billy Napier. There's a lot.
You really get into the weeds if you start basing the balance on what you think next year is going to be.
What you think the 24 teams could look like
That would be really dangerous. Imagine doing that next Wednesday for what you think is going to happen next season.
But
when you don't even know what happens yet this season.
But I think in the case of Tennessee and Florida, right, like you get the feeling that just right now if you had
the feeling, but what feeling did you have about Tennessee a year ago?
You're right.
Did most people have about Florida a year ago?
All
so
you
that's
have is
how different it can be.
LSU a year ago was coming off back-to-back
bad seasons.
There
were people
seasons.
Like, LSU's a joke. Brian Kelly, what a terrible fit. And now everybody's like, LSU's going to win the West and compete for the national title.
Yeah, I think people look at LSU and they say this is a team that could be, especially when they expand the postseason,
right?
Like this has the profile of short term, like a perennial postseason kind of team.
So there's there's no way you can say that year after next.
So you think basing it on the last 5 years without forecasting the future? Okay, so
you know maybe you could weight it a little more per year, a little more on the most recent year and less on the most distant year that you do it. You know, so you could do it that way. If you wanted to,
If
you wanted to do 100% over the last 4 years, you could go 40, 30, 20, 10, and that adds up to 100%, gives you 10% on 4 years ago and 40% on last year.
So spitballing 4 home games and 4 road games for Auburn with that formula, like you're probably looking at, let's assume Alabama and Georgia road games.
I'm keeping Alabama and Georgia on the road. Then, I'd keep the same Ole Miss, Mississippi State on the road. And that's where coming up at home, if I put Texas in there And you got LSU, Texas, Arkansas, and who?
Bandit? Any particular reason to keep the Arkansas game? Just a game that's
because
been...
it balances it out more than if I kept Texas A&M, Auburn's schedule's tougher than the average schedule should be.
Arkansas, based on the last 5 years, would be the weakest West opponent.
Opponent, and Vandy would be the weakest East. Meanwhile, Auburn plays the strongest East and the strongest West, and the team that's projected to be the strongest West right now.
So LSU, Texas. Arkansas, and then who would be okay, and that'd be back to back years for Vandy playing at Jordan-Hare, which is one thing maybe the committee would try to avoid. I could see, you know, maybe they would not want.
Maybe you'd flip flop. Maybe you could get Georgia back on not Auburn and Alabama and Georgia being the same year.
Although then Georgia's playing back to back.
Yeah, Georgia's not.
How about this?
Auburn would need to go to Georgia back to back.
Maybe Vandy gets swapped out for somebody who hasn't been to Jordan-Hare very much, like Kentucky or Missouri.
Then you need to lessen one of the other teams again. See what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to keep it fairly balanced.
What's the gap between Vandy, South Carolina, and Missouri over the last like 4 or 5 years? Because that's where I would wonder if you could maybe swap Vanderbilt for a different East team.
South Carolina's the closest to them with twice as many wins. If you did that, you'd probably
could you swap Vandy for South Carolina?
You know what you need to do then? You'd need to pull LSU off the schedule and play Texas A&M. Okay. And I don't know that would bother some Auburn people losing LSU. That would then mean you'd play Texas A&M.
You'd have A&M in back to back years. No, you wouldn't. You'd keep the A&M rotation. 2022 and 2024.
Yeah. Okay. You'd have Texas A&M,
Arkansas, and South Carolina.
And South Carolina at home.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you...
That's the thing. That's the thing. If you pull one, you need to try to balance it on the other side. If you pull an easier opponent, then you need to pull one of the tougher opponents, try to balance things out a little bit.
But I could...
That's what they're faced with by next Wednesday.
I could see the committee saying we don't want a team playing in the same venue 2 years in a row.
Sure, I can understand that completely.
So like Vanderbilt, and then then it would probably be easier to pull Vandy off the schedule rather than have Auburn go to Vanderbilt in 24 and then try to figure out from there what to do with the... Could you keep Vandy on the road and pull one of the Mississippi schools?
Well, you're convincing them to play back to back years.
Pulling one of them off the schedule.
Oh,
saying so it'd be road games.
I guess you could put Ole Miss
off the schedule completely,
and then when you put Vandy, and then you'd need to add like Missouri or South Carolina in there.
Okay, so then your home games would still be LSU. We can keep LSU in this situation.
You keep LSU that way.
So LSU, Texas, Arkansas, South Carolina at home.
Yeah, that would make you going on the road to either South Carolina or Missouri would be on the road because you already had Texas, LSU, Texas, Arkansas, and Vandy at home.
No, but you're not playing Vandy at home 2 years in a row. Is what I'm saying.
Oh, that's right.
So you're moving Vandy to the road. And you're getting rid of one of the Mississippi schools.
Then you'd have to pull South Carolina, Missouri
at home. So I'm thinking home games against. So what do you think of this schedule? So what do you think of home games against LSU, Texas, Arkansas, and South Carolina, and road games against Alabama, Georgia, Vandy, and either Ole Miss or Mississippi State? One of the two.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. As a matter of fact, who was it? I heard somebody.
And I'd like to keep the Ole Miss series.
During
one
of the SEC baseball broadcasts, I heard one of the announcers, and I watched so many of the different ones, I don't remember which one. One of the announcers said he had been told that Auburn, South Carolina could be a matchup in the three permanent opponents.
Well, we've said that after Alabama and Georgia, I mean, it could be...
Mississippi State is the school Auburn has played the most and has the best relationship with. I mean, they're land grant, they're very similar schools.
But we've said that third spot for Auburn could be a spot that gets squeezed between the sides where they have to make a matchup like Auburn, South Carolina, or Auburn, Vanderbilt.
And statistically, over the last 5 years, South Carolina is worse than Mississippi State.
And I don't hate. I mean, especially if you're going to reevaluate.
The longest trip you've ever made.
If you're going to reevaluate it after 4 years, I don't hate South Carolina it's not as much of a rivalry as some of the games that you'd be jettisoning off the schedule. But at the same time, it would be it would make sense if you had to balance the schedule that way. Is that being Auburn's third opponent.
That would mean, all right, if you did Auburn, Georgia, South Carolina, Auburn's three opponents over the last 5 years would give you a total. Alabama's been the best. Georgia's been second. South Carolina's been 14th. So that's 17. They average about sixth, which means you're playing a pretty good upper half schedule.
How confident are you?
That compares to where Nick Saban was upset with Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee. Those three total, let's see, LSU is fourth. Tennessee and Auburn tie for ninth. They're both those three total 24. Alabama averages playing an eighth place team. Auburn averages playing a sixth place team. Well, that's about normal.
How confident?
That's too tough.
How confident are you that the conference keeps LSU as one of Auburn's eight opponents in 2024?
I'm pretty confident.
Okay, because that's one that I do think maybe if you
pretty confident just because over the last 30 years it has been a pretty good game.
It's been a great game, and yeah. I wonder if people outside the rivalry appreciate how great the Auburn LSU series
has been.
That would be one to me where I'd say if you can help it.
I mean, I know you've got an affinity. Ole Miss is one that I don't think that there is really that feeling of, wow, we've got to keep the Auburn-Ole Miss game for 1 year.
And I think if Auburn-Ole Miss became an every other year thing, that's fine. I think the rivalry has added some juice over the last few years. I've had,
From what side?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, and this is pointed out to me by somebody on the Ole Miss side.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss people seem to feel
Here's what's going on. One, I think as Alabama and Auburn have both taken fewer in-state students over the last decade or so, because those numbers have gone down. You're aware of this. Mm-hmm.
Much more than Auburn.
But Ole Miss has taken far more students from the state of Alabama than they used to. And what's happened lately is that when Ole Miss plays Alabama or Ole Miss plays Auburn, it's a high school reunion for a lot of kids because a lot of students from their various classes or their friends who went to Alabama or Auburn, the other school, it's become, in a way that it wasn't 15 or 20 years ago, it's become much more of a reunion of people from the state of Alabama with their friends who go to Auburn or Alabama because so many students from the state of Alabama end up at the University of at Ole Miss. So,
I just don't know a whole lot of Auburn people that just get so excited about playing Ole
Miss. The weekend has been really lively the last few years at Auburn, but it's also been Halloween weekend, you know, when these things happen. But it's been, the last few years, the Ole Miss weekend has been a pretty big party when they come to town. And you also have the Hugh Freeze, Lane Kiffin angle, if you want to explore it.
Yeah, I know, I don't think that gets Auburn people all in a tizzy. It does the Ole Miss folks.
I do think that
I think Ole Miss is much more wanting to try to get to the point where they feel like they've evened things up against Auburn. Right now, I think the series is 39-11.
I know we looked at some of these numbers, 5-15, the last 20, which is
11-39 overall.
Is it three wins at Jordan-Hare all time?
Yes,
for Ole Miss. Two of them in the last 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if the conference was making the decision we were just making hypothetically, and you got one game left for Auburn, and it's either Ole Miss or Mississippi State.
It's going to be Mississippi State.
The tradition says State. Auburn's played them a lot more. I wonder if the conference would be swayed by the Lane Kiffin, Hugh Freeze of it all, especially the fact that Hugh Freeze used to be Ole Miss's coach.
I think the conference would probably like to just tone that down.
It is Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is Auburn's third permanent rival in basketball, right? It's Alabama, Georgia.
Well, it had
and
to
Ole
be
Miss.
Somebody.
Had to be somebody. Yeah.
Auburn was a team everybody wanted when they went to the permanent rivals.
And that's how the system that could end with Auburn getting Ole Miss, South Carolina or Vanderbilt.
Right.
Is that you had to find somebody.
So you
got to
get somebody for a third one. Yep. All right, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think? How would you do this? Let's go 24 before we go into the future. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Whether you're a senior golfer or pro athlete, high school football player, or little league,
at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final few minutes of hour number one here on the Tuesday Drive with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. And, we'd love to hear from you. Anything that you want to talk about. I mean, the golf, professional golf, is the big story of the day. I'm trying to see, has there been any other
other
sports news?
Brief baseball news, Bill.
Well, there's some baseball news.
Well, some awful baseball news, I think. Jacob DeGrom. I mean, that is – have you heard that it is –
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's going to undergo Tommy John.
UCL tear, another Tommy John surgery, right?
I didn't know if you were talking about Roger Craig.
No. I mean,
that was sad news.
That's sad news.
But he was 93.
Yeah, DeGrom
doesn't make it any easier. But
DeGrom, who has been so dominant when he's pitched well, you know, now he's going to have Tommy John surgery for the second time since his career started in the late 2000s. I think it was like 2009 or 2010 was when he had the.
You know where he came out of? He was a Gator.
Oh, you Florida Gator?
Yeah.
I feel like I remember that. I remember because who was the we're gonna play. Remember some guys from that era? Was he on like the Laporta Gators? Remember Matt Laporta?
Yeah, I do.
Oh yeah, no, a couple guys who come to mind is like, and Bill, I'd like your answer to this one.
Actually, no. DeGrom. No, it was Disco. DeSclafani was from Florida, and DeGrom was from Stetson.
Oh,
and he played in the Florida Regional. That's what I remember.
Okay,
yeah, my bad.
I was going to say, I don't remember DeGrom as a Gator, but the...
But I remembered him just thinking of watching regionals. I remember that.
I remember going to see Matt Laporta and South Carolina had Justin Smoke. Remember? Those are two guys where the jaw-dropping kind of power. Who comes to mind when you think about like somebody you saw play at, you know, in person, Plainsman Park or something, who just had like unbelievable... Like it would astonish people to remember because Justin Smoke made an impact on me. I remember he had a ball that's still going, and that's I mean there's players like that who make those kind of impacts. I wonder if you had somebody in mind, somebody whose power like you remember immediately when you think about that guy hit the ball about as hard as anybody I saw in my time going to these baseball games. Who comes to mind immediately when you think about like as gifted a power hitter as you got to see. Come through college baseball.
Oh God, who was the LSU first baseman? Eddie Furness.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah.
That was against Auburn. Yeah. It's like home run seemed like every at bat. But I mean guys like Will Clark and of course Frank and Bo. I mean there have been some unbelievable
monsters,
ones.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso was okay.
Pete Alonso was pretty good. Yeah.
He's a Gator.
Oof. You know, Donaldson had some years where he was, he was hitting the ball like crazy too. I remember in that same sort of time period. But yeah, there's some we've had a few come through the ballpark over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. We're just about out of time here in hour number one. Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to throw it to my new guy, but I guess not. I mean that's sort of if you go to the baseball news the front page of MLB.com.
That's a big one too.
Welcome, Ellie.
Ellie De La Cruz, number one prospect in baseball, making his debut for the Cincinnati Reds, tonight.
Reds are bringing up a ton of young talent. It is amazing. And then, of course, your new guy gets the start for the Braves this weekend, A.J. Smith-Shawver.
How about that? It could be an exciting new piece for a Braves team that's had to make do.
Without Soroka some of their guys. Just hadn't been able to get back to it. He's down. All right, we're halfway done. Love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here for hour number two, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. We'd love to hear from you. And one of the ways you can get through to us is by calling the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com or RadioAlabama.net. We are aware that there have been issues with the podcast. Seems like we're switching feeds right now.
Providers, something.
Yeah, there's something going on behind the scenes, but we are efforting.
Fear not.
Yeah, we are efforting a solution, and it seems like one is coming very, very soon, and we should have new episodes of the podcast coming very, very soon.
Yeah, we apologize for that. You know, what you can do is you can text us and we'll give you highlights.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. You know, but appreciate folks who have been listening live, and we appreciate the patience of folks that are waiting for us to get the podcast situation in order. But I can
we'll give you Drew's number. You can text him.
I can assure you that the issues are being ironed out as we speak.
334-321-1390. Toward the end of hour number one, we got back into something that's fun to talk about. That's speculating on what the SEC is going to do in 8 days. We're 8 days away from the Southeastern Conference announcing the opponents, the SEC opponents for each team. So we'd love your thoughts on that. And then something I had not seen, you mentioned to me, and it's something that not a surprise, but Greg Sankey, Nick Saban, among some folks who are in Washington, D.C. to speak before Congress about trying to get some control over name, image, and likeness.
Right. I would say they are, you know, they're up there lobbying for federal assistance in the regulation of the NIL space in college athletics because different states are passing different laws that are going to make it, I think, really difficult for anyone to police the sport. And I think Nick Saban and some other folks see that it's increasingly likely that there are going to need to be some laws above the state level that try to keep competition and fairness and everything else that needs to be considered. You know, they'll consider that while also trying to figure out a way to make it a playing field everyone can compete on.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what comes from that as this is like, oh, good, there was the SEC meetings, and now you've got this, and then next week we'll get the SEC opponents for 2024. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Tex is up first this hour. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. So I was listening to a couple of your discussions. First and foremost, my opinion on what the SEC is going to do is something that nobody's probably thought of.
What's that?
So they always throw something. They always throw something in there.
Oh, true.
Just look at and go, well, so trying to predict them is trying to, like, predict the weather. You got about a 50-50 chance. But I would I personally would not want the Georgia rivalry to go away, but I do want to go away from home, Georgia-Alabama, away against Georgia and Alabama.
Well, I think the only way that Georgia is going to go for that, making that change, is to play their back-to-back years like they did here.
Right. I agree. Or they're no longer a permanent opponent. So
I just don't think the SEC is going to let that happen.
Yeah. So anyway, a little
– And Tex, before we move on, though, I wanted to throw in that – I I'd like your thoughts on this. I would hope that the SEC doesn't make anyone play in the same venue in 23 and 24. We were talking about that in the first hour, as you know, you could balance out Auburn's schedule by sending Vanderbilt to Auburn, you know, in both years.
Would you feel that way about 24 and 25? Because if you're going to get Alabama and Georgia off Auburn's home or away schedule, you're going to have to do that one of those years.
I'm not as passionate about getting the home schedule switched for Alabama or Georgia. Like, I'm okay with the odd even, you know, playing them both in the same year if you need to.
It doesn't bother me as much now that they're not back to back or so close together.
But yeah, I wonder if the SEC is going to be reluctant to send anyone to the same place 2 years in a row. Just because of
they'll do it to us.
That's true. So. Yeah, well.
That's my opinion, Dan. If they'll do it to anybody, they'll do it to us. So I would be surprised. Somebody's going to have to give somewhere through this whole change in the process. I would rather it be Texas and Oklahoma have to give, but that's not going to be the case. And likely, if there is that kind of change, we would end up doing it 24-25, back-to-back, not 23-24. So anyway, here's my opinion on something else completely different. Our regional, I think that two pitching staffs took significant advantage of Auburn hitters by pitching backwards. Fastballs and change-up and curveball accounts.
Yeah, a lot of first pitch breaking balls.
Well, I tell you what, about 82% of the time, not that I'm very good at math, but 82% of the time, I counted in game one, we got first pitch changeup.
Yeah. Was it the
because
Penn?
They knew we were dead.
Was it the Penn game or the Southern Miss game where the pitcher kept throwing first pitch like 75 mile an hour, like high strikes to Auburn? Was that Penn?
Penn game.
Yeah, it was Penn.
The first game.
Yeah,
that 82% first pitch changeup.
I mean, he was throwing home run derby balls, you would think, but when you're sitting fastball, right, Tex?
You're not going to hit home runs.
No,
when you're taking it.
Very few of them went over the fence, as I recall.
That is correct. But I tell you what, I can't say anything negative about these guys. They play hard. They played really hard down the stretch. And things went their way. They played hard early, and things didn't go their way.
Right.
I love this team. Just imagine, just hypothetically, if Gonzo was able to go through the year. Just think.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Glad you made that point.
What the difference the staff would
have Huge difference
like.
That could have been. Yeah, some of the other guys may not have gotten the opportunities that are down the road going to help them.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. Hey, Tex, I was wondering, what did you think about Tennessee going to Southern Miss for the Super Regional? That caught me by surprise.
If that staff gets to take anybody anywhere, I wish they would go to, like, have to play in South America. So
yeah, I heard, Vitello's really hot. It's like he's always hot.
Well, his team's 5-12 away from home this year. I can understand why he's a little.
And they're going into a place, if you've never been to that stadium in Hattiesburg, it sits down in a hole. Their right field group tailgates, and it's overlooking, and all the sound goes down onto the field. Southern Miss is really, really, really good there,
mm-hmm.
and it would not shock me to see Southern Miss make their first trip to the College World Series.
Wouldn't break my heart at all.
Yeah, it was Ole Miss. Oh, yeah. It was Ole Miss last year who beat them. I forget if it was regionals or super regionals.
It was regional,
but that place was absolutely going crazy for. And granted, there were some Ole Miss fans having something to do with that too. But that place, I mean, the notion that people think, oh well, it's not an SEC venue. It's not a it's not look they got some big league stuff going on there at Southern Miss.
It's a really cool stadium. Hey, and one last thing, I know you probably got a call waiting or two. So you're talking about guys that can hit the ball far. So my son is a 17-year-old playing at East Cobb for the East Coast Grays. Had a teammate. After my son hits one that hits. It's a wood bat tournament. It over the 365 sign, it hits the scoreboard and bounces back. This young man walked up and hit one over the scoreboard, and everybody in the stadium watching is trying to figure out where it went. His name was Pete Alonso as a 17-year-old.
Oh, wow. Was he a pretty big fella then?
He was a big 17-year-old. Not
yeah,
as
I'm
big
sure.
as he is now, but he was mature. And his ground balls had that sound to it. I say this all the time. If you go listen, you can walk in Baton Rouge to the hidden facility and listen to Will Clark hit off a tee. And
it sounds
him
different,
because
right?
Of the sound.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds different. And it was that way for that summer watching Pete Alonso hit.
Tex,
in college.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I got I got to see Billy Butler play in high school, who folks might remember. He was a first-round draft pick and played some years for Kansas City. I guess more than anything else now, he's remembered because he had a great nickname. Country Breakfast was what they called Billy Butler, which I always thought's a great name for a big power hitter. But yeah, he was out of Jacksonville, and I got to see him, and there was a little bit of that where at that point in my life, I had never seen someone hit a baseball like that.
Yeah. Well, and two other guys. Bill, you got to remember Bruce Castoria from Mississippi State.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
In back-to-back days, he hit line drives to Doug Gilchrist. One ripped the webbing out, and the other got caught between the fingers and yanked his glove off into the outfield. And he also hit two home runs during that time. And then John Newberry from Florida State, who at one time held the record, career record for home runs.
Yeah, well, they got a bandbox, though.
Well, but they do. But he landed three against us on a weekend on top of the circus tent behind right center field.
That's a shot.
Yes, it's a bandbox, but that circus tent was a long, long way away from there. he could hit one. And I will tell you this: There was a guy named Vincent Jackson that played at Auburn.
Yeah.
Some people call him Bo.
Heard of him.
He hit a lot to right Georgia, center, though, you know.
Well, but there was a night at Georgia that he got booed in his fourth at bat because the ball bounced off the top of the fence. He had hit three that were still screaming on the way out. So that young man could hit the ball as hard as anybody that I ever saw. So
no doubt.
I just wanted to chime in with that.
Great stuff, Dex.
One more thing. On golf, I could not care less. It's about money. It's always about money. It's always going to be about money. And all it is the groups. I don't know. The term merger gets used a lot. I've not been able to find that anywhere in the announcement from either one of the two big players in that. It's they're working together.
And that's true.
They know that neither one of them wants the bad publicity. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, they hit a little white ball that never moves. I just don't understand how you can get paid that much to do that. So, all right. Hitting the white ball that moves is way more difficult. Okay, guys?
All right, Tex.
Talk to you later.
All right. 334-321-1390. Let's get back to the phone before we get to our first break. Who do we have next?
Jeremy
is next. Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, yeah, no problem, guys. Y'all talk about a guy that hit the ball the hardest you've ever seen it hit, and regularly. Josh Willingham. Kid played it. You know, I played against him in high school at Mars when he was at Mars Hill.
Hmm.
And he wound up playing Division II ball at UNA.
Right.
Back, and that was when UNA was pretty good. And, of course, he still, you know, one of the most rare records in Major League Baseball is he hit two grand slams in one game. So that was a guy that, and if you got to see him play at UNA, I know it's Division II, and people will kind of shrug their shoulders.
Well, it doesn't matter. If you can hit a ball and hit it far, that doesn't matter to me what level you're playing.
There's a reason he spent as much time in the league as he did, and that's because the guy could rake. And you talk about that guy that when he hit a ground ball, I played shortstop, and when he would hit a ground ball at you, it was like a lawnmower coming through the grass. Just the sound that it made when it was coming at you, it's just different. And, it's hard to describe that to guys unless you've experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that guy play and watching him play at UNA was something.
I went to a Marlins game pretty early in Josh Willingham's career. I did not follow him that closely before that, but remember Josh Willingham early in his Major League Baseball career as a I think I got to see him as a rookie, but no, he was big time power and played, like you said, played for about a decade or so around the league.
Yeah, he was a crazy athlete. Like, he started out in the minors. They didn't know if he would play catcher or in the outfield.
Yeah, I remember him as a catcher prospect.
Yeah, he came up as a catcher and then moved to the outfield. You know, he eventually settled in basically as a DH by the time it was all said and done. But he was a crazy athlete coming out of college. And I mean, you just talk about a guy that just constantly centered the ball up. Like, you talk about barreling, like just barrels all the time.
I didn't realize he was from Mars Hill. I knew he'd played at UNA.
Mars Hill, they're in Florence. Y'all talk about the football schedule and stuff. It always gets me riled up because you just don't know.
Do you care about preserving the LSU game? Like, do you have a preference or an affinity for that rivalry?
No, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. I grew up, we didn't play them every year, so it's.
What about Georgia?
Oh, I want to play Georgia. Even if that has to be a non-conference game. I want to play Georgia. I just don't care. I want to play Georgia.
I think they've got to be a conference game, but yeah, I'm with you.
Well, and you know, Jeremy, I've wondered about. I mean, it's impossible to know because Auburn has played Georgia every year since, you know, forever.
Yeah, except for World War II.
Pretty much every year.
I'm pretty sure Moses said it was something that had to be done.
Right, and I just wonder
since 1892,
for folks who have expressed like, oh yeah, get it off the schedule or something like that, like. That would impact Auburn's ability to recruit Georgia, right? Like
one would
think that like part of the appeal for players in the state of Georgia to come to Auburn is the possibility that you can be part of an Auburn team that beats Georgia.
Sure. Has anybody ever gone back and looked at like Auburn recruiting in Florida since we quit playing them every year?
Not quite the same.
We don't recruit Florida as well as we used to.
No, you're right.
And I've never thought about it that way, but that's a possibility.
We used to do much better in the Panhandle.
Sure.
In North Florida than we have over the last 20 years.
Back when we played Florida every year and played Florida State regularly, like you used to get those kids out of Florida more than you do now.
Well, and I think people, you know, a lot of people would be surprised to know that between Pensacola and Panama City, like that Auburn is the closest SEC school to that area, because you're probably closer to, you know, until you get close to Tallahassee. Or so, you're closer to Gainesville than Auburn.
Somebody needs to tell those kids that, because they don't come here very often.
That's right.
I'm just not too worried about it. I mean, if they're going to get to a point where you're playing everyone every 4 years, trying to figure out, like, y'all guys have spent the better part of the last 30 minutes trying to figure out Auburn's schedule and trying to make it fair. Imagine trying to do that for 15 other teams.
Oh, I could do it. I could do it.
Bill's already done it.
I've got drafts and things up. What you got to do is you got to toughen Georgia's up a little bit. Auburn's isn't that crazy. I mean, as long as you just make you know, the ones that look overly easy a little tougher, it doesn't take that much. You can tweak them.
It's fine on paper until you kick it off, and then you realize that what you've got written down is not what's going to happen.
But,
and that's the whole point.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, but what you do is you give yourself the option of adjusting it every 4 years, then you can at least try.
I just think, you know, by the time, if with Auburn's luck, if you adjusted it every 4 years, you would rotate Texas A&M off. They would stink, and we wouldn't play them for 4 years. You would put them on, and they would be the four best years that they've had.
Yeah, well, it's not the good thing is there are teams.
There's teams like that. You've got your Texas A&Ms, your Auburns. When it comes to everybody else, you've got Texas A&Ms, your Auburns. With Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, I would lump Ole Miss in there. Maybe your Tennessees, we'll see how they continue to do. But, you know, you've got four or five teams that are right there in the middle of the pack right now that any given year they can go on a 2 or 3 year bender where they're really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
And if they're on your schedule, they're going to make your life miserable. Or they're going to go through a 3 or 4 year window where they absolutely stink and you pray that you've got them.
Yeah, but as long as you've got...
There's nothing you can do to balance that out.
Oh, no. But as long as you have Alabama and Georgia on your schedule every year, you don't need to have too many more of those other teams that are capable or are there in that mid-range.
Yeah, there are very few absolutes in college football. There are very few things that you can definitely count on.
Well, there's never been an absolute until Alabama came along. Seriously, over the last 15 years, there'd never been anything like that. Even Alabama had never been like that.
I agree with you, but I just, when it comes to the rest of them, I just don't know. I don't care.
Let's just play them all. Let's let everybody play them all. That's the best thing you can do.
And there's no telling how loyal they'll be to the divisions and stuff like that, too. So, I mean, it's total dice roll.
Well, but you're not adding BYU and Colorado to the conference. You're adding flipping Texas and flipping Oklahoma to the conference. Your odds of playing bad teams has diminished tremendously.
Oh, that's right.
And Jeremy,
that's where you're not going to be able to avoid playing
good
four teams that have top 10 talent.
No, that's true.
You're not going to be able to avoid it.
No, so what you have to do is recruit top 10 talent so that you can compete with them.
And I would hope that Texas or Oklahoma, you know, can find their way onto just about everybody's schedule like we were saying.
If they don't, I'll be very disappointed.
I mean, because
they need 16 games and you've got the other teams. Everybody should be playing one.
Either Texas or Oklahoma in their first year in the league. That's how you can do it.
We're way behind. Need to get to our first break here of hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. So stick with us. Here on the Tuesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. I don't disagree with Jeremy. I mean, there's no sense. I'm not getting all that worked up about the schedule. It's just fun when you hear the commissioner say, we want it to be balanced and keep as many rivalries as possible. That's sort of like, oh, well, here's probably the way they're going. But he's right. I mean, you have no way of knowing, like we were saying a while ago. A year ago, nobody had any idea that the perception would change as much for LSU and Tennessee and for Florida.
Right.
I mean,
and I think in some cases,
and in Alabama,
yeah, in Alabama, and even I guess for Auburn, you know, for in the sense that, that Auburn is usually better than they've been over the last 2-3 years.
That's exactly
you know, especially
right.
Especially if you use the last 10 years instead of the last 5. So yeah, I mean, fortunes can change at different programs
and quickly,
and more quickly than ever before. I mm-hmm. think, and I think there's a couple things going on there, and they bode well for Auburn, right? The portal makes veteran talent available in right. a way that they were never before. We're seeing more quarterback movement from the portal than ever before, and so many teams. I mean, you've seen this before, where it's largely the same team with a different quarterback, and it can make a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely,
a huge difference. And teams can go find that quarterback in college football, not have to recruit one and groom him out of high school, but rather find one that is ready to contribute from the moment they step foot on campus. And that's, you know, that's a huge difference. And the reason that's good for Auburn is because I feel like Auburn has done a lot of these things in the offseason. Like,
and NIL also is not a minor factor in that. And we mentioned a while ago, and we'll talk with Jake, get his thoughts on this, that with Commissioner Greg Sankey and Nick Saban, among some of the folks that have gone to Washington to try to see if they can get some type of guidance or limitation. I don't know. I don't know that it would be limitations, but consistency throughout states and schools with NIL.
Yeah, federal policy or federal guidance. I mean, whatever you want to use. I would just think, it's not – I don't know how you express it legally, right? Like, I don't know what the law would say. But I'm fine with NIL in the sense that I'm fine with players being able to earn money in college football. I don't think it should be dependent on if you pick this school, this is the money that you earn because you chose this school, rather than endorsements that you earn as a player. And right. I don't know how you divorce NIL from recruiting. Right? It just feels
no,
like
no, the only way you can is you do what Nick, one of the things that Nick Saban has said, and hey, let's make it like the NFL. Let the players unionize. Let's have pay scales and different lengths contracts.
Right, and you know, turn it into a more...
It's definitely an employer-employee relationship.
Right, and at that, I mean, do the academic standards fall by the wayside? And is it just minor league football to like get guys ready for the pros? Is it still a, you know, an avenue for players to earn college degrees?
I'm first still thinking if you're in college, know that there are two things you have to be doing. You have to be doing your job, and you have to be staying eligible.
Right, and I don't think the professionalization of compensating them for the work as you know salary on top of the other things. I don't think that ruins it too much, but it does seem like I don't know. I wonder if there's a way to sort of separate players earning endorsements because they're doing so well versus players being promised money if they pick a certain school.
I don't see a problem that with, but it, I think it would need to be real endorsements then right. for that. That's like, okay, here's what you're getting, and then I mean I don't know.
I think the problem is how do you define a real endorsement versus an inducement.
I mean that would be the dream
because that's
to
the
be able to have
because that's the difference, right? I mean endorsements versus inducements, right? You know the NIL deals that can promise that will help bring you to school versus the NIL deals that you would earn from your performance at that school, which you know it just feels like one feels like a much more serious threat to competition than the other.
Yeah, one seems more like a wish than a possibility, likelihood.
One feels legitimate, right? Like one sounds like, oh yeah, that's probably what should be in college athletics, and the other one feels like a way for
pipe dream.
The other one feels like a way for people to, you know, I mean, the inducement sort of it.
Continue to take advantage of of the loopholes.
I don't know how you get there, but I'd love to see it.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side here on the Tuesday Drive.
Walk on sports.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Tuesday afternoon with Bill and Dan. And let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest. And that, of course, is Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Jake, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great, guys. Always great to come on and chop it up with y'all.
So you still married?
Yeah, she hadn't divorced me yet, man. We made it over.
Hey, that's good. That's a big hump.
I owe you $10, Bill.
There you go. There we go.
Yeah, man. We already hit that over. I'm really excited about it.
Oh, man, that
excellent,
is great.
Excellent work, Jake. So we've been talking about a couple of things going on in the world of college football. The scheduling stuff has been fun to kick around.
Oh, it is.
SEC.
It is. I mean, since we weren't shocked last Thursday when the word came out that the SEC wasn't ready to announce a permanent schedule. But it is sort of cool now that we can wait, and a week from tomorrow, we'll have unveiled everybody's SEC opponents for the 24 season.
Jake, I think it's safe to assume that Alabama and Georgia remain on Auburn's schedule in 2024. Is there anyone else you think needs to be there from the SEC? Any rivalry you'd really like to see preserved or even reintroduced by the SEC onto Auburn's schedule?
Yeah, well, as an Auburn fan, Vandy. Give me Vandy every year. If we have to play Alabama and Georgia, we should get Vandy
absolutely
every year.
And like that's in all seriousness, you're absolutely right. If you want to make it balanced and you're playing the top two teams, you better be playing the bottom team.
Yeah, and look, Auburn-Vanderbilt, I mean, they've been playing for a long time, too. I mean, you look at that, that's not exactly, you know, a new matchup. But, you know, the thing that I find the most interesting is that the biggest news that came out of that for me, I know that, you know, we all knew it was going to happen, is no more division.
Right.
Like, everybody's talking about the 8 and 9 game schedule, and they should. Look, I get it. But circumstances dictated that outcome. I mean, look, I don't agree with a lot of what ESPN does, but at the end of the day, you signed a contract. I'm not paying you more because you made a decision. That's not how contracts work. It's like you paying me paying somebody to build a deck, and then they put a grill on there, and I didn't ask them to, and they want me to pay for the grill too. Well, I didn't ask for that. That's not what the contract said. But they'll get to 9 eventually. There's a lot of different things going on, 2024 off-season scheduling. But, you know, not having the divisions is huge.
I love it.
That was huge news for me. And I think that's where we're going in college football. I think within 3 years, nobody's going to have divisions. We've seen other conferences already get rid of them. But I think it's a smart play. But, yeah, I think Vandy has to be on there once you go to the three permanent rivals. You know, you look around the rest and look, there's no such thing as, like, everybody having an even schedule. That's impossible. But the best way you can do it is to have no division. Do the permanent rivals, and within a 4-year career, you play every team home and away. That's the best way you can possibly do it. Nothing is fair. Life isn't fair. Football is cyclical. Teams go up and down. So I think that was the biggest news, and it got overshadowed by the 8 or 9 games. But I do want to say this. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the 8 or 9 game situation, and some schools didn't want it. Some schools wanted it. You know, oh, well, we want to make sure we can make a bowl game. Well, I think that comes down to the mindset of the head coach in the program. If you're looking at that extra game and saying, oh, no, we're worried about it, I think that speaks volumes about where your program's at. Because to me, when I'm looking at it, when you go to a 12-team playoff, we hear the term bubble teams all the time in college basketball. And what do bubble teams need those last 4 to 6 games? Or in football, the last 2 to 3 games? You need a good strength of schedule to be able to get in. Mm-hmm. So if you're a team that's fighting at the end to try and get that 11th seed or that 12th seed in the college football playoff, you don't want to be playing a bunch of cupcakes. You want to play somebody and have the opportunity to control your own destiny. So you kind of find out the mindset of where programs are.
Yeah, the only really compelling reason to stay at 8 for me, Jake, was the belief that this is a package worth – $80 or $90 million to a broadcast network, and they would simply be giving it to ESPN for free, without changing the terms of the original deal. I find that to be more compelling than it'll make it hard to get to 6 and 6.
We're concerned about safety. That was the biggest joke that I heard.
Or
from
we can't. Yeah. We have too many out of conference games scheduled. Like, a lot of those felt like flimsy reasons, and maybe people don't want to come out and say this is about getting an extra $80 to $100 million a year from ESPN, but that makes more sense than any of the other excuses I heard.
Well, Dan, it's a business. I mean, in any negotiation or any contract, not dispute, but conversation, the SEC has leverage. ESPN has leverage with the contract. You're going to flex and see what you can get. And they had to kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. But, yeah, the player safety thing, They you're going to say the player safety, but you're going to a 12-team playoff to make more money. That makes a lot of sense.
And you played a 10-game conference schedule 2 years ago,
and it's much safer.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that. You can get hurt against anybody too, but they care about player safety just like the PGA really cared about Saudi Arabia. We saw how that turned out.
Yeah, no, Jake, and what about the safety of the FCS schools that you bring in to lose 70-0? Yeah.
It's amazing how our morality gets used against us in certain things, and then you find out that nobody really cared who made decisions.
Like, if anything, I think more competitive football is a good thing for player safety because you won't have teams going out there totally overmatched in paycheck games and getting beaten 70-0 by superior athletes. That's my thoughts on player safety.
And look, the equipment now is that you got air conditioning and helmets. Okay, when it comes down to it, football is a game that when you know you sign up for it, you know you can get hurt. And when there's grown men, and these kids even at 18 now are 6'6", 300 pounds and can move, when you have grown men running around at full speed, playing in games that matter not only to the school they're playing for, not only to the fans, but to their ability to make money to play this game, you know what you signed up for. I mean, it's football. Nobody is forcing anybody to play. This isn't Iran.
You know, as cynical as we are about player safety, someone pointed this out to me over the weekend, you know, and because I think there have been some steps in the positive direction. I think making it clear that concussion should be taken seriously, because it wasn't all that long ago, Bill, and Jake, you remember this too, where it was like, get your balance and get back in there. Like, walk it off. Like, you know, get.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that I think taking.
Here's a little smelling salt.
Yeah, I think taking
that. When my dad was playing, they gave you sugar cubes instead of water because water was for cowards.
Salt tablets.
Yeah, oh boy.
Back in
salt
the
tablets. Yeah.
More than a lot of stuff that feels performative. I think taking concussion seriously and destigmatizing. Oh well, he's soft because he left the game with a concussion. Stuff like that. I think is probably like that. That's for the best when I think about the football of even the recent past versus right now.
Yeah, I've never met anybody who doesn't want player safety. Like, have you ever met somebody who's like, no, player safety, no, just let them be knocked out? I've never met any of these people that don't want player safety.
Well, the Romans back in the day didn't care about player safety.
I mean, no, I was going to say, you do mean.
Oh,
they
man.
Weren't exactly driving cars to work. I mean, Elon Musk is landing rockets on platforms in the Indian Ocean upside down. So I think we've came a long way.
Yeah. I mean, you meet the occasional old timer who thought baseball was better when there were collisions at home plate, I guess. But like,
when the batters didn't wear helmets, you know.
Yeah, there weren't face masks
in football. Yeah, I mean, yeah, things change. So, hey, I wanted to get your thoughts too, Jake, on the entourage apparently that's up in Washington. With including Greg Sankey and Nick Saban, do you think those big guns might actually be able to sway some folks into trying to help with controlling NIL?
No chance. I mean, this was the whole problem with just letting it out with no rules. I mean, they let this out with no rules. They let the transfer portal out with no rules. Now you can stay longer than Van Wilder in college if you want, because once you let it out of the box, you would get, if they tried to regulate it federally, and look, we've had Jim Jordan on, we've had Josh Hawley on, we've had all these guys, Tommy Tuberville, we've asked them, and they all have the same answer. We would get hit with more antitrust lawsuits than you've ever seen in your life. And another big problem is every state's different.
Mm-hmm.
Every state handles it different. So it's a photo op is what it is. Nick Saban's got a lot of power, but he doesn't have that power. Nobody has that power. So at the end of the day, it's really just a glorified photo op.
Yeah, we were talking in the previous segment. Everybody comes down differently on NIL. The fact that players can earn extra money doesn't bother me too much. I'd love to see a way to divorce sort of endorsements that you earn from your performance versus inducements, like money that's promised to pick a certain school on the recruiting trail. I don't know how you legally land that plane.
I don't either.
Though, right?
That's the problem.
You can't now, but here's what they should have done. NIL should be, if Bryce Young wants to do a deal with Dr. Pepper, that is between Bryce Young and Dr. Pepper. It's these collectives. That's the biggest problem.
Oh, yeah.
All they do is pool money, right? They pool money together, and they use it in recruiting. If Ron's Heating and Air wants to do a deal with a DB for, and then it has to be $1 million or whatever it is for 20 grand, that should be between the DB and Ron's Heating and Air. But the collective, the middleman, went from being the NCAA to the institution. And that's where the problem is. That, and when you look, being able to mix NIL with the transfer portal has given us true free agency, because players in the transfer portal are proven commodities. What's the difference between free agency in the NFL, okay, and free agency in college football? There is, and the transfer portal in college football, there is none. It's the same thing. So Frankenstein let the monster out, and now everybody's getting upset because it's ripping villagers apart. But well, my thing is, players should get paid for their name, image, and likeness, but the deal should be between the player and the business. There should be no middleman.
And the collective business, you know, quickly took over like so much of that. Yes. But we've even said on the show, Jake, that absent an accurate term to describe a player who is in the transfer portal right now, because he's not a transfer because he hasn't picked a school yet, like free agent is probably about as correct as once a student athlete goes into the portal, that's as accurate a label as you're going to find for it.
Yeah, and here's another question. You know, I hear the term student athlete all the time. When's the last time somebody was academically ineligible? Can anybody remember that? Like any big time player, the last time they were in anything?
It's very, very rare. You're right.
Yeah, I can't think of one off the top
athletic,
of my head.
Well, athletic departments have invested a lot, Jake, in tutors and academic resources to
that's exactly right.
I guess that's the answer I would give if I didn't want to suggest anything improper.
Yeah,
is happening.
No, I challenge anybody to tell me the last time somebody was academically ineligible. I can't even remember.
I mean, it does seem like if players are academically ineligible, it's often players near the bottom of the depth chart, right? It is.
It's amazing how that works out, huh?
I don't know.
What a coincidence, Dan.
I don't know.
Because they don't work hard enough in the room or on the field,
That would be my guess based on unscientific observations about it.
Yeah.
Great stuff as always, Jake. Tell folks about what you got going on Crane & Company these days.
Oh, yeah, man. We're rocking and rolling. Had Tim Brando on this week talking a ton of college football. Now that rosters are getting close to – see, I don't like to make predictions before we're at least halfway or three-fourths of the way through fall camp, because sometimes you don't know who's going to win the job. You got guys that get hurt all the time, but we're really starting to kind of hone in on who some surprises could be. And I'm going to tell you guys, bias aside, y'all know me, I'm harder on Auburn than anybody. The more I look at this Auburn team, if they can have a pass rush develop, you look at that schedule, Auburn could be a big surprise in the SEC this year.
So, you know, you made a point about how late sort of rosters come together now. It's got to be tougher than ever for, like, the magazine folks. Right, because you
magazine. What's that?
Right. I mean, yeah.
Isn't that what holds the bullet?
You remember. You know, back when the college
that's right.
June was college football magazine season.
Oh yeah.
And now, I mean, how do you? I mean, the rosters aren't. The dust hasn't settled yet. How do you print anything about these sorts of? I feel for those guys, but you're right.
I do too. I do too, man. But yeah, you can check us out. We're live every weekday morning, 6:30 to 8 a.m. Central. Just go to YouTube. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N-N Company, or go to the Daily Wire Plus. And talking everything, man. College football has been some moves in the NFL, obviously. NBA Finals. We got us a series, boys. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, no kidding, Jake. Great stuff as always. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week.
Hey, y'all as well.
Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays, and we appreciate his time. So we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Tuesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here on this Tuesday afternoon. Our thanks to Jake Crane for joining us. And, yeah, I mean, Jake will he'll take some shots at Auburn. But, I mean, I can understand the drastic change that has been made in the roster. It'll be really interesting to see where some of the predictions. That was sort of funny, though, when you're talking about magazines, and I'm thinking, I guess they're still out there.
It's got to be tough, though. I mean, with the late movement and stuff, the way teams can change after.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you break
Imagine somebody like Phil Steele with all the numbers he has in his thing and having to be adjusting rosters.
I wonder if it's moved to the website or something. You know what I mean? I wonder if it's moved mostly online, because one would think, like, with Phil Steele, like, I mean, he couldn't have published it with Peyton Thorne on the team.
No, that's right.
So, I mean, what is your Auburn prediction, you know, look like? I mean, the late movement.
A whole lot of difference when you've got somebody else that, this guy looks like he could be the starting quarterback.
I mean, it really is just it's a very different sort of deal. So, great stuff from Jake, as always. Jason Caldwell tomorrow?
That is exactly right. We'll get Jason's thoughts. I mean, as we obviously wrap things up, we've got super regional sites. We mentioned it a while ago. Southern Miss getting to host Tennessee. I looked yesterday at the NCAA site, and they had where they had the home column, they had Tennessee listed. But, no, Tennessee hosting. And one other one that was, who was it, Indiana State traveling to TCU?
Yes, Indiana State has other on-campus events going on, and I guess there weren't hotels or staff available to host a regional. There's been some criticism of, could the NCAA have found a regional closer to Terre Haute, Indiana, in that situation?
Well, you go with the matchups that you have. It's a bracket that's drawn up.
And they both submit bids, right? And so I guess Indiana State, because of their lack of facilities available this weekend, didn't even submit a bid. And so TCU gets to host that one, even though TCU was weren't they like a 3 seed?
I was thinking it was two.
TCU was a 2, Indiana State was a 1, but TCU's going to host it because Indiana State had some
on-campus events. Indiana State was the 14
national
seed.
Bit of a surprise Tennessee didn't get the pick over Southern Miss.
Yeah, it is, but maybe the feeling was, hey, Southern Miss deserved this. They were shocked last year, and they might have deserved hosting a regional.
Well, and how about giving the nod to the team that won their conference tournament in these situations, which I don't think the NCAA has done. But I think
they've got a head coach who's stepping, this will be his last season.
How would you feel about the NCAA in a situation where it's close, saying one team won their conference tournament, the other one was an at-large, maybe the conference champion?
The SEC would say, come play in our league.
Yeah. But maybe more teams would go to Hoover trying to win that thing.
I think Tennessee was trying to win it.
Tennessee was trying to win it, too.
All right. Fun show today. As Dan mentioned, Jason Caldwell with us at the outset tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.